Talk sports with Craig Carton and Chris McMonagle on The Carton Show. Afternoons from 2 to 7 on WFAN. WFAN-FM, WFAN-FM HD1 New York, and Odyssey Sports Station.
Danielle McCartney.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM. The Fan. WFAN.
Well, it's a good Tuesday morning, New York sports fans. I'm Danielle McCartan. We'll be talking all things New York sports right up until 5 a.m. right here in New York City and beyond. So thanks for tuning in. You got Alex Azarm and I live right here in Lower Manhattan. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call, but you already knew that. Call me up. Be part of the conversation. Now, I must say, you don't have to get ready if you stay ready. And here I am. Surprise. I'm happy to be with you and happy to hold it down with you after a complete stunner of a game two at the Garden. Wow. I mean, an absolute New York Knicks epic collapse. I mean, it opened the door for this series to become a series again. The Knicks are like 64-1 when taking a lead into the first quarter. Not anymore. What an epic collapse. I mean, this series is totally different. If it's 2-0 going down to Atlanta rather than 1-1, see, that's a big difference. This loss just a couple hours ago, like I'm still not over it. It is unfathomable that the Knicks have dominated exactly 7 quarters of basketball against the Hawks so far. They led in this game too. The Knicks led 91% of the game. That's right. You heard that right. The Knicks led 91% of game two. Well, except for the part that matters most, the closeout. It is the second largest blown lead at home in the playoffs in the play-by-play era. Okay, we're talking epic stuff. Like I'm sitting there on my couch, dog next to me, watching it. And the Knicks were cruising. Oh my God, cruising. And even when it was a 3-point game with 4 minutes to go in the fourth, I wasn't worried. Even when it was a 1-point game with 2:43 left, I wasn't worried. When the Hawks took the lead with 2 minutes to go in the game, you guessed it. Well, maybe I was a little bit worried then. When the Hawks were ahead by 2 with 25 seconds left, I was still a little bit worried, but still confident. And even when Atlanta was up by 1 point with 7.1 seconds left, in my mind and in my heart, the Knicks were going to pull this one off. Just because how sheerly dominant they had been, not just last game, but through the first 3 quarters of this one on home court. But I was wrong. I was big time wrong to feel that way. And quite honestly, I'm still trying to make sense of it. How did the Knicks lose that game? Because, again, throughout the first 3 quarters, they had an absolutely swarming defense. Atlanta could not get anything going, especially Jalen Johnson, who was a complete non-factor early on. You're watching this and you're going, wow, this is a nice sight to see. And in the first half, the Knicks were up by as many as 11. Like, man, they're cruising. This is like no stress. Like, you know, when you describe pitchers as having like stressless or non-stressful innings, ups and innings, this was it. They were cruising, the Knicks were. Cruising. Mitchell Robinson, even despite all of it, finished with a career high in playoffs, 13 points. The Knicks, they were dominating the second chance points. They were dominating the points in the paint. And Karl Anthony Towns was cleaning up not only other people's messes, but even his own mess. Like, Karl Anthony Towns was a vacuum cleaner around the rim through the first three quarters. And it was looking like Cat took over the game. Like, I love the swagger. I love the it was a turnover, and he stood up and he pointed the other way. Like a first down, he stood up and pointed like it was a first down the other way to signify the turnover. Like, the shooting the three-point ball and then looking at the hand with the three fingers up, blowing on it after hitting that, like, 30-foot jumper beyond the arc. I mean, this had the makings of another Cat takeover type game until it wasn't. There was a timeout called by Atlanta I want to point to as the turning point of this game. Deep into quarter two. And I'll tell you something. That team looked different right after that timeout. The message was definitely to play more physically. The physicality, Atlanta picked it up, man. McCollum finished with 11 of his 18 at that point, through that point, 11 of them out of 18 came in that quarter too. And that was like the slow simmer for him and the beginning of the end for the Knicks. Now this Knicks loss, this Knicks collapse, the Hawks were down 14 points in the third quarter. That loss, again, the biggest fourth quarter blown lead in franchise postseason history. And what is it tied with? Well, maybe we should start giving tonight's game a nickname, because the other largest fourth quarter blown lead, the Reggie Miller choke game. That's how bad this was. And yet, the Knicks still had a pulse after McCollum miraculously missed both free throws with single digits on the clock. He missed both of them. Then you had this sequence. The rebound by Josh Hart. The outlet pass down court to Bridges, who then missed I looked it up. It's a 12-foot jump shot. I thought he got a decent look at it. It was a little rushed, but he got a decent look at it. And he just missed it. And, you know, I don't recognize the voice of the reporter, but one of them asked him a great question after the game. And it was just that. I mean, there was nothing more that could have been done in that situation. You had like 4.8 seconds left on the clock. Hart has a clean rebound. He's got a clean outlet pass up the court. Basically hitting McBride in stride, pretty much. McBride got a look. Couldn't get it to fall. And that's it. Game. And even still, I'm watching him like, there's no way that just happened. So I apologize that I don't recognize the voice of the reporter. I've actually never been in the Knicks clubhouse, Knicks locker room. So I don't know if I would know it, even if I, you know what I mean? So I don't know if whoever it was a great question. So here is Bridges after the game. Being asked about the look he got at that final shot.
The look you got.
Yeah, just miss it, you know. You know, like, I got nothing wrong with it. Just got to make it next time.
Was there any thought to trying to get to the basket there?
Just trying to, you know, get to the spot, you know, with the time going out, just try to get a nice shot, a rhythm shot.
So you like the shot you got there?
Yeah.
Okay, done. That's it. There's nothing more that could have been done. Now, put that to the side, because I know that there was lots of confusion about whether or not the Knicks had a timeout available after the two missed free throws and before, excuse me, that whole sequence with Hart and Bridges set up. There were like 5 seconds in the game. People are yelling, call timeout, call timeout. But the Knicks didn't have a timeout. They did not. The team knew they did not have a timeout. The players knew they did not have a timeout. And now you're going to know, because here's why. The in the live production of the game, the box score in the in-house production was wrong. Therefore, the broadcast team was misled by that live box score that was given to them or said to them in their ear, whatever. The live production end box score was incorrect. And someone messed it up because of the use it or lose it rule. I'm going to do this two ways. Right from the rule book and then like in layman's terms. Okay, it's late, right? You don't want to use your brain cells. But here's the rule directly from the NBA's rule book. It is rule number 5, scoring and timing. I guess Roman numerals always screw me up. VI-6. Okay, so it is rule 5, section 6, timeouts, mandatory/team. The rule states, each team is entitled to 7 charge timeouts during regulation. Each team is limited to no more than 4 timeouts in the 4th period. Each team will be limited to two team timeouts after the later of the 3-minute mark in the 4th period or the conclusion of the 2nd mandatory timeout of the 4th period. Now, I'll give it to you in layman's terms in a second, but the idea basically is this. You know how when you're watching a basketball game and the last couple seconds of the game on like a real clock take longer than like the whole game? Like that's what this is meant to prevent. And maybe that's an exaggeration on my part, but basically it's meant to break up the choppiness and the stop and go at the end of games. This is what this use it or lose it rule is. But in regular terms, there's 2 parts to it. Think of it this way. As soon as the 4th quarter starts, a team has 4 timeouts. That's it, maximum of 4. Even if you started the quarter with 5, 6, or even 7 of them remaining, they go like this. Poof. They vanish. Instantly gone. So the 4th quarter, 4 timeouts. Okay. The next thing is when it gets down to 3 minutes remaining in the game. That 4, poof, turns into 2. Any other timeouts, wiped away. So basically, you're playing the clock at the same time. Like, you have to have the clock in your mind. Because if you don't use them, you lose them. And let's go back to the game that ended just a couple hours ago. Mike Brown's timeouts in the 4th quarter, he called 3 of them. 3 of the 4. One at the 10:30 mark, one at the 2:43 mark, and one at the 10-second mark, remaining. See, he only used 3 out of the 4. But someone somewhere in the production truck that's creating the live box score for the production team did not account for that 3-minute rule. So that's why that the announcers were saying that they had 1 more timeout than they actually had. They didn't have it because of that use it or lose it rule. But to me, even still, I'm looking at this and I'm saying, like, Mike Brown is also at fault. Because he should have been a little bit more aware. Like, he could have taken a timeout on the other side of that 3-minute mark. The one he, like, essentially just poof, lost. And then he screwed up by waiting until the wrong side of the 3-minute mark to take it. He waited 13 more seconds to take a timeout. Whereas he could have done one on each side of the 3-minute mark if you wanted. Or done one before the 3-minute mark hit. And then saved 2 for, crunch time at the end. The bitter end. So that he could take his time and draw up something to get the ball in the hands of his two best players, either Brunson or Towns. So in a way, yes, it was a mistake in clock mismanagement due to that use it or lose it rule. So where did it go wrong just a few hours ago? Where and how did this team lose this game? I mean, like, take your pick. Is it A, towards the end of the first half, where I wrote in my notes, the Knicks' offense was generating good looks, but they couldn't knock the shots down? And in my notes, I named Hart and Anunoby as especially struggling, especially behind the three-point line. Or is it B? In the fourth quarter, there was only one pick and roll between Towns and Brunson. Why, oh, why would you stray away from the formula that got you there? And speaking of those two guys, Brown sat Cat and Brunson at the same time. And early on, that allowed the Hawks to go on a 13-2 run, close the early gap. And actually, that's when Atlanta took their first and almost only lead of the game in that second quarter, 8-12 left and a half. Karl Anthony Towns was asked about that after the game, like basically like when you and Jalen were sitting on the bench, they were able to make a comeback. What are your thoughts on that, pretty much? Here's what he had to say.
I didn't watch the game, but what I do know is that the time when we were off the court wasn't when we lost. It was the time, you know, we were on the court at the end and when they found ways to make shots. So it's on us as starters and me and JB to make it tougher on them.
Okay. How about moving forward? We don't have them off the court at the same time. Maybe that's the move. I don't know. Just saying. Or is it C, that the Knicks bench struggled mightily? You look at the body of work that every player off the Knicks bench put together. Every bench player operated in the minus in game two. And that just can't happen. Or is it D, the fact that there were 10 missed free throws by the Knicks? And sorry to point the finger again, but Anunoby, he was 50% from the line, putrid, when it mattered most. How about E? Was it E? Fourth quarter points in the paint. In the fourth quarter alone, the Hawks had 22 points in the paint. You know how many the Knicks had? 4. Or was it F? Really, if we're really being honest, C.J. McCollum was better than Jalen Brunson in quarter four crunch time. Like, the Knicks, at the end, had no answer for McCollum defensively. Brunson couldn't handle him one-on-one. Let's keep it real. And on a side note, how unlikable is C.J. McCollum? Like, completely. He is nothing but an instigator. Words after game one about Brunson on Broadway after he intentionally kicked him in the balls. Words for the Knicks bench after quarter one just a few hours ago. He was trying to engage in anyone. He was only one of him versus and then the entire, all the black jerseys around him of the Knicks. He was in trying to engage anyone with the fight for anyone that would take it. Luckily, no one took the bait. He picked a fight with his former teammate Alvarado on the court at the end of the third quarter. Just an instigator. Unlikable. I hate those kind of guys. But the truth of the matter is this. The Knicks' defense fell apart in the fourth quarter. And C.J. McCollum was the reason why. So out of the list of, what is that, 5, 6 different things I just listed, what do you think the biggest problem was? Because here's what Josh Hart had to say after he was presented with actually some of the things that were on my list.
Just all of it. This was a game we should have won, and the playoffs, you can't give away games. So, we all got to make sure we all locked in, watch the film of it, get better, and, you know, go in and battle for game three.
Well, he's right when he says all of it. I don't know. I mean, I just can't believe it. I am stunned still that the fact that this team dominated the first three quarters, they led that whole game until they didn't. And here we are. Call me up at 888-808-1019. Let's go to Steve in Rockland. He is the leadoff caller of the night. What's on your mind, Steve?
Wow. How are you?
Well, loaded question, but all right. How are you?
Yeah, anyway. So, you know what? All these things, you know, the NBA is very unique in that the clock stops and you can score. You're frozen in time and you're given an opportunity to add to your point total. And what was the Knicks, 50% from the line for the game?
Unbelievable.
In the playoffs in a one-point game.
Right.
Well, you know, they competed. I mean, there was plenty of compete even when it wasn't going their way.
Yep.
Not like they were not trying real hard. So, you know, game stops. You're given that opportunity to score.
Mm-hmm.
And in the playoffs, if you're going to go 50% from the line, you better do everything else perfectly, or you're going to lose by 1 point,
right?
Potentially,
right?
Right.
And it kills me, Steve, because when you're shooting free throws, it means that there's nobody that is guarding you. They should be free throws, and yet the Knicks had trouble.
Well, tonight they did. Now, and here's something just generally, and I want to know if you agree with me here. So, during the regular season, you see fouls called that, you know, if you were playing a pickup game, mm-hmm. you wouldn't mm-hmm. call that. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't call them, right? And all of a sudden, in the playoffs, we have a new sport. I call it football basketball.
Well,
all right.
That's a better alternative than keeping stoppage and all this stuff. It's a better alternative. Let them play.
I don't disagree with that. But after you spend a season, like, keeping these guys in shackles, all of a sudden, the level of contact that I observed in this game with Minnesota and Denver, you know, I was just surprised that the referees were let that level of contact throughout the game, you know. And so I don't know what Adam Silver, I don't know what he's concocting, you know. Do they have like a conference call with the referees and say, look, I know what you did during the regular season, but now I want you to swallow the whistle.
But Steve, it's a good thing. Like, who wants to watch these ticky-tack fouls? Not me. I'm not interested. I go to a commercial, I change the channel at that point. It's hard to watch.
Then did you see at the end of that game with Denver and Minnesota?
I didn't. Didn't see a single minute of that game.
Check this out. So you're gonna see that the guy on he missed foul shots. The guy on Denver, he went up for this shot, and the guy in Minnesota, he was not really near him, and the guy on Denver kind of kicked him when he was in the air, and they called the foul on the guy in Minnesota.
Hmm.
And then when they went to the replay, it was like the referee was like, I don't care what that. Like, I don't know how they did not overturn that call. That's something for you to. That'll be something for you to look at. Now, as it turns out, you know, it did not affect the outcome of the game. Minnesota Minnesota won, I'll tell you. And you know what? I am actively rooting for Julius and Devo. I actively root for Minnesota, all right? I thought that Julius got a major bum rap when he was here. I appreciated him very much. And DiVincenzo, look, if you want to get, sometimes when you want to get, you got to give up.
I know that DiVincenzo thing. He hurt harder than Randall. I mean, he was a gritty player. He was all over the place, and I just thought he was. I don't know.
Oh, tonight he sealed it. You got to see. He got underneath the boards. He got the rebound. Murray missed his shot. You know, with like, you know, 4 or 5 seconds, and I don't know how he snuck in with the big, he got in there, the sapling got in there under the redwoods, and he got the rebound, you know, and then he came, and then he started to play down the court, and then he filled the lane and deferred, and he slammed that ball down. That's what ended the game. You'll see.
Yeah, I'll have to look it up.
You'll see it.
All right. Well, Steve, I'm happy they're swallowing the whistles. I think it's much more enjoyable basketball and to watch. And thanks for the call. I really appreciate that. It's just much more enjoyable. Who wants to watch ticky-tack fouls? Who wants to watch them go to commercial all the time? Like, who wants to see that? I know I don't. So, yeah. Basketball, football, bring it on. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to get aboard. And you might have heard my text message go off. I got to tell you something. I'm sitting in the studio. I put on ESPN on purpose on the TV. And for the first time, I saw my friend Madeline Burke hosting on SportsCenter. So I sent her a video of herself. Because she used to sit in that chair when she came with that one right there. She used to sit in that chair when she came in here and used to come on with me. And now she's on the TV next to that chair. And it's just crazy. It's wild for me to see this. And I'm just so happy for her that she landed this anchor of ESPN SportsCenter. And maybe the overnights aren't so lonely anymore. So it's nice. It's nice to talk to you on the phones. It's nice to get text message from those that you know. And I'm just so proud of Madeline Burke and getting that job over there at ESPN. So I'm very proud of her. And it's awesome. It's crazy to see. It's wild to see. Like, hey, I know her. Really cool. Cool stuff.